I'm Carrie Miller, now in depth on rethinking drugs and drug offenders. Attorney General Eric Holder has ordered prosecutors to find alternatives for nonviolent drug offenders. He's repeatedly said that the incarceration rates in the U.S. are unjustifiable and unsustainable. My guest, I think, would agree, but he believes more education is needed. Carl Hart is a neuroscientist and researcher who takes on the mythology around drug use and addiction, writing in his new book, "The Public Will Have to Be Reeducated About Drugs, Separating the Real Potential Dangers from Monstrous or Salacious Fable." Professor Hart is an associate professor in the psychiatry and psychology departments at Columbia. His new book is titled High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery that Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs in Society. And he's with us today from New York. And Professor Hart, it's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, how big of a difference would changing the policy on mandatory minimums make in the way that we criminalize drugs today?
Well, you know, it's a great first step, particularly from the Attorney General, because he's not really in a position to make laws. And so it's what he can do, and it's the right thing to do. But what really needs to happen is that Congress needs to redo the laws, where we need, I argue in High Price, that we should decriminalize all drugs. I mean, that's where the changes really need, at Congress, not at the Attorney General level.
Yeah, one of the things that you say about that is that the policymakers who are leading our criminal justice system, who are members of Congress who are making these laws, have by and large very little experience of drugs themselves.
Well, that's quite generous. They have little knowledge, little education, and they are really appealing to an ignorant electorate. And so that's just like that combination has really caused a lot of harm in specific communities, because believe me, if we hadn't had these sort of racial disparities in the enforcement of our laws, I don't know if we would get the Attorney General saying that their drug war is, in effect, racist.
Why? Why do you say that?
Well, this has been going on for, at this level, maybe 30 years, 25 years. So we now have 2.3 million people in prison. We incarcerate more people than any other nation in the world. And it's largely driven by the war on drugs. It's now come to the point where it's inescapable, and it's embarrassing, particularly for a country that, like us, we like to think of ourselves as being attentive to social justice, inequality, and all of those sort of American ideals.
Well, the other thing that you suggest is that it would change if we decriminalize drugs, and we'll dig into that a little more here in a minute, but it would also change the way that we view drug offenders themselves, right?
Absolutely. I think that the way we view drug offenders is based on ignorance in part, and so I try to re-educate the public about drugs. Like right now, we are in this great moment. The guy from Toronto, Rob Ford, the
mm-hmm.
mayor,
yeah.
He recently admitted to using crack cocaine or having smoked crack cocaine while he was in office. That's the typical crack cocaine user, and that's shocking for many Americans that, he's a white guy and he's employed, and by and large, he was responsibly employed. That's the typical crack cocaine user. That's an interesting and an important moment for us to take advantage of in terms of re-educating people about the inaccurate stereotypes that we have about drug users.
I think part of the other, I grant what you've said about the misperceptions about who would use a drug like crack, but I think the other thing about Rob Ford is he's the mayor of a city and he's breaking its laws. Isn't that part of the reason that we're shocked to hear some of the things that he was doing?
I wish that was it, but I don't think that's what's going on, because we have had mayors, presidents, and other folks who have broken the law in terms of, let's just think about people who have traffic violations. We're not up in arms when someone breaks a traffic or breaks a traffic law. That's certainly breaking the law. So if it was simply breaking the law, we wouldn't be upset. We're upset because this guy, particularly the people of Toronto, they're upset because this guy has admitted to using a drug that's associated with low-class people.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to, I'm glad you brought this up, because it's interesting to think about the way he has talked about it, too, has tried to explain it. Oh, these are the things that I did, you know, in the middle of a drunken stupor. I'm somebody who has fought, I'm trying to think if he's used the word addiction or not, but I've fought these urges in the past. I mean, even he feels obligated to make some explanation for this.
Sure, certainly. He lives in this society just like all of us. I mean, he's equally ignorant about this, and he doesn't know what's going to play to the public, how it would play to the public. And so you're absolutely right. The way he's in a sense his own worst enemy by continuing to talk.
So it seems like in reading your story that you're, I guess I think of this as kind of agnostic on whether drugs are good or bad. Is that a good way to explain it or no?
That's absolutely right. You're right on point. It's like asking the question whether sex is good or bad, or whether driving an automobile is good or bad. It's equally stupid. It's not informative.
Tell me then how you explain the, I mean, is it the consequences that you worry about? Is it the health impairment that you get if you use too many drugs? I mean, where does the concern kick in for you around drugs?
Well, we should think about it in the same way we think of sex, or we think of driving an automobile. Where does the concern kick in? It kicks in when, for example, when people drive their automobile too fast or recklessly, or they text and they drive. The same is true with drugs. We know, and this is where we have been irresponsible as a society, we know a large amount of information to help people stay safe when they are using drugs. That information hasn't been transmitted to the public, and that's irresponsible for a public as educated and wealthy as we are. So the vast majority of people who use illegal drugs, cocaine, marijuana, methamphetamine, you name it, the vast majority are safe and do so safely, just like the vast majority of people who drive automobiles. The concern is when people overindulge, when they have lack of information, they're ignorant. For example, if they combine a drug like heroin and alcohol, that's dangerous. That's a concern. You increase the likelihood of dying. So those are the kinds of things that concern me when people are ignorant about their drug use.
I think there's also a perception that there is a link, a pretty strong link between drug use and crime. You look at a city like the city that you're in right now. We saw a spike in not just crimes associated with acquiring drugs, but also crimes associated with trying to get the money to acquire drugs and all the things that happen around that. I mean, Rudy Giuliani based two mayoral campaigns and tried to base a presidential campaign in part on what he did to turn that city around.
Well, if you are using Rudy Giuliani as an intellectual or educational information specialist, you're in trouble. He's not the person that you should be citing for that, because he was wrong. If we look at crime in the United States, crime was, it peaked throughout the United States about the same time, and it went down in the United States about the same time. So despite what Rudy Giuliani or those folks say, the data does not support what those folks say. And when we think about the connection between drugs and crime, the FBI publishes these data. They're on their website every year. The connection between drugs and crime is it is weak at best. The vast majority of people who are arrested don't have drugs in their sort of system when they were arrested for a crime. And overwhelmingly, folks who commit petty crimes and those sorts of things, they were doing it before they were using drugs.
Carl Hart is with us. If you've tuned in and been caught up in the conversation, he's an associate professor in the psychiatry and psychology departments at Columbia. And we're talking about the story he tells, some of it personal, some of it, as you hear this morning, data-driven as well, on our perceptions, our ideas around drugs. The book is called High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs and Society. If you'd like to join in, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Go to the Daily Circuit page, click on the Hour Show to comment, and you can reach me on Twitter at @CarrieNPR. Is your idea about decriminalizing drugs because too many people are ending up in our prisons and our jails pursuing something that is ultimately only going to be a problem for them and really isn't a problem for society? Or is it, why don't we just decriminalize drugs and then we'll break the black market and we'll have a much more transparent society around drugs?
Well, I think I should say that, you know, I came to this fight about 23 years ago. That's how long I've been studying drugs. And when I started, I was in the belief that we should punish drugs harshly because I thought drugs were destroying my community. But over the years, I have discovered that a few things that changed that opinion. I discovered that drugs, first of all, we have been lied to in terms of their potential dangers. Not that they're not, but they're just like automobiles, as I said. The vast majority of people use these things safely. And then when I started to look at the numbers that we were arresting for drugs and people who are serving prison sentences for drugs, it just seemed as though the crime, the penalty didn't fit the crime. I mean, decriminalization does not legalize drugs. It simply treats drugs like a traffic violation. So the society is still sending the message that they disapprove of this behavior. But now I think the penalty will fit the crime more appropriately. People no longer will get a felony charge. They can now continue to participate in our society where they can make contributions by getting a job, paying taxes. All of these things are decreased once you have a criminal conviction. If the presidents, the last three presidents, Barack Obama, George Bush, Bill Clinton, all of these guys used illegal drugs. If they had been arrested for their drug use, they would not be allowed to make the contributions that they've made to this country. I'm just arguing that we should extend this sort of privilege to everyone.
Do you think that it's incumbent on a society to be concerned about excessive drug use and addiction? And if so, where would we draw the line on that?
Absolutely. As a responsible society, you certainly should be concerned about any sort of medical problems that people face and you try and deal with it. That's absolutely right. But the problem here is that when we think about drugs, the disproportionate amount of the information that people have about drugs is on this small pathological group of user. Only 10 to 20% of the people who use drugs meet criteria for addiction. And so those people should get the help that they need. It tells you a lot. It tells you that if only 10 to 20% of the people meet a criteria for addiction, that means that you can't say it's the drug when the vast majority of the people who use the drug don't have a problem. Now we can focus our efforts more carefully and more precisely on the problem. The problems related to drug addiction, like people may be addicted because they have co-occurring psychiatric disorders like depression, schizophrenia, anxiety. They may be addicted because they have no other options. They have no jobs. They have no skills. A wide range of reasons why people may be addicted. But we can now focus our efforts more precisely on those reasons, as opposed to thinking about this 80 to 90% who don't meet criteria for addiction.
Okay, so the society that we imagine when drugs are decriminalized would be much more concerned about rehabilitation, right? Getting people into programs that feel like they can't handle the drug use anymore, their life's being taken over by that. Is that right? We would not criminalize any amount of use of drugs?
That's exactly right. Not personal use. We would not criminalize that. Of course, sales still remain illegal, but we won't criminalize personal use. This isn't a new concept. We already do it with marijuana in a handful of states. Marijuana has been decriminalized in a number of states. And not only that, Portugal has decriminalized all drugs since 2001, and they are faring better than us on all of the major indicators. Drug use is lower than ours. Drug-related deaths are lower than ours. You name it, they are doing better than us, and they've decriminalized all these drugs. They don't spend as much money on their criminal justice system as a result. They don't have as many people in jail. Their citizens don't lose the possibility of contributing to the society and paying taxes because of some conviction.
Carl Hart is with us. If you'd like to join the conversation on this idea of decriminalizing drugs, and I want to tell you that the book is about much more. It's also about his personal story and how he came to these ideas and some of his suggestions for the way the justice system might look. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 to John in St. Paul. Hi, John.
Yes, I have two things for your guest. The first is really strongly object to the analogy between the use of drugs and driving a car or engaging in sex. For every 10 people, for our best estimates, one person will become an addict the minute they pick up a drug. So the analogy with driving a car or, you know, possibly with sex, it just doesn't wash, and it makes this activity, which can have a terrible effect on society, in my mind, it trivializes it. My second question for him is, what does he see as the unintended consequences of decriminalization? So a minute ago, he talked about decriminalizing the use of drugs, but still having the manufacture and sale of drugs illegal. And those two things really are not at all compatible. If you decriminalize the use of drugs, it will certainly drive up the manufacture and the demand for drugs. And we still have then all of the negative consequences of the illegal drug trade. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, I'll take the second point first. First of all, he has no evidence that decriminalizing drugs will drive up use. We have evidence from around the world, and not only around the world, but in the United States about marijuana and decriminalization. So that's just that's an exchange. What we're having there is an exchange in ignorance. That's just not true. I mean, there is no evidence to support that position. And his concern about 1 in 10 of the users becoming addicted, certainly there will be people who will be addicted, and there are people who are now addicted. That 1 in 10, that's exactly right. But that's the minority. And if a society thinks that they will prevent every sort of accident, every problem, that's just unrealistic. And we should not be basing policy on the minority. I am asking that not only do we decriminalize, I'm asking the country to have an adult conversation about drugs where we provide education to people who are using. We will keep far greater numbers of people safe than we are doing now with our ignorant-based approach and scare tactic-based approach.
Just as you noted with our past three presidents and their drug use, you admit to drug use in the book, marijuana and cocaine. And of course, it occurred to me in reading that, you know, that's not without risk, given as accomplished as you clearly are here as a scientist and a college professor. Did you feel like you had to, that it was important to the story here and to your ideas to say, been there, done that, and I'm yet another example of why we should decriminalize?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, it took a lot of struggle for me and a lot of personal reflection in order to admit that I had used drugs in the past, because I know the potential consequences, as Rob Ford is discovering those potential consequences. But I wanted people to understand, and I wanted people to understand that just because you were not perfect in your life doesn't preclude you from making a contribution to this society. On the one hand. And then on the other hand, I wanted other people also to come out of the closet about their drug use so we can no longer characterize these drug users. Drug users are people who look just like you and me, people who are responsible, people who are taking care of their families. But so often what happens is that we see these things dramatized on televisions, and just ignorant portrayals of them in the media. And so we have a skewed perspective on what drug users actually look like. They look like you. They look like me. They look like President Obama. They look like President Bush. They look like President Clinton.
I mean, Carl, you're also African-American. You had to factor in the idea that you would be reinforcing wrong but prevalent stereotypes, and that might also create some resistance to your ideas.
Absolutely. I do recognize that I live in the United States where we have these racial stereotypes. But by that same contributions, I understand that I have made a tremendous amount of contributions to science, and I have risen to the highest levels of my field. And so if people could not get past that, well, that's on them. I can't control that.
To the phones, to Brent in Minneapolis. Hi, Brent.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to thank your guest. He's, in my experience, has been he's correct about comparing the use of drugs, the use of an automobile, or to the use of anything else that it needs to be used responsibly. My experience has been there, the vast majority of drug users are responsible people, but they're able to manage their use. I'm not one of them. I've been in and out of AA and other places. I'm working on it today. I'm working on staying sober today. But I do have a job and other things, but it's not working for me. But my experience has been with them, and I know people who sell drugs because I associate with them and been in treatment with drug sellers who are convicted of drug possession and need to go to treatment. And their typical client is someone who pops up their door once a month, and they have a family, they have a job, but they have another life. And the responsible drug user is part of a silent majority of drug users because they're not able to talk about it because of the stigma or the ignorance that caused the automatic judgment on their life and on their career and on their whole identity if they were to speak about it.
So
as a society, we make it very difficult.
You think that's right, Carl?
It's absolutely right. That's what I write about in the book, and that's what the data shows. The data shows we've been collecting these data since, maybe 40 years now in the United States, federal government surveys, and that's precisely what they show. All the data supports that position.
Book we're talking about is called High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs and Society. Join the conversation here. You might get a busy signal. You can go on the Daily Circuit page and click on the Hour Show to comment. You can talk to me about it on Twitter. I'm at Carrie, KerriMPR. Back to your calls and your questions here on the other side of news. And you're looking at a Florida congressman who is actually in court for a drug conviction, right, Tom?
That's right, Carrie. Florida Congressman Trey Radel has pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charge of cocaine possession. He's also sentenced to a year's probation. The first-term Republican entered the plea this morning in court in Washington, where he acknowledged that he did buy cocaine from an undercover agent last month. The 37-year-old says he struggles with alcoholism and will seek treatment. He made no mention of his political future, but says he made an extremely irresponsible choice and let down his family and constituents. The state of Missouri has executed Joseph Paul Franklin, the white supremacist who claims to have killed as many as 20 people across the country as he targeted blacks and Jews during a 3-year rampage. He was convicted in 8 murders but was killed this morning for killing a man outside a suburban St. Louis synagogue in 1977. Franklin also admitted to shooting and wounding civil rights leader Vernon Jordan and Hustler magazine publisher Larry Flint. Higher mortgage rates and last month's partial government shutdown have taken a toll on home sales. The National Association of Realtors says fewer Americans bought existing homes last month. The sales pace was the slowest since June. A limited supply of houses on the market also helped to reduce sales. More coming up here on the Daily Circuit.
Later on All Things Considered, could Minnesota's future funding include casino gambling at MSP Airport? The governor's not ruling it out. I'm Tom Cran. We'll have a report and all the day's news. Join me on Minnesota Public Radio News starting at 3.
Hey, Screen Time is coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. We talk about the films that have been made of the Kennedy presidency. Yes, Steph, the assassination, but also of the presidency itself.
Of the presidency and the views of Camelot and the golden era that people look back on with such fondness.
That's Screen Time this morning. We do it every Wednesday. Come back for it.
programming supported by the University of Minnesota Press, publisher of Harriman vs. Hill, Wall Street's Great Railroad War by Larry Haig, and featuring local railroad titan James J. Hill. upress.umn.edu.
Support for this program comes from the Women's Foundation of Minnesota, championing equality for women and girls through grant-making, research, and policy, providing leadership to end the sex trafficking of Minnesota girls. WFMN.org.
We're back to the conversation here and back to the phones to Dick in Andover. Hi, Dick. Thanks so much for waiting. What do you want to add?
Well, I think that decriminalization, while it's an admirable idea, is not really addressing the problem, just like the war on drugs is not addressing the problem. And your guest kind of brushed by that in a couple of callers ago when you said it doesn't mean that we're going to legalize it, and the sale would still be illegal. I think we've got to fundamentally look at this very differently, and that is there's an economic incentive to continue to get new users for everybody in the supply chain, if you want to look at it that way, of supplying drugs all the way back to the poppy grower, there's a tremendous amount of money to be made. And the way to deal with this is to realize that you got to take the profit incentive out of the illegal trade, just like in Prohibition. So the way to do that, I would propose, is that you schedule those drugs, just like we schedule narcotics now. You go to your doctor, you declare you're addicted or that you want to use drugs. He'll try and talk you out of it, but now you're in the system at that point. You get a prescription if you really want one. You go to your druggist and you get it filled.
Okay. Carl,
Real briefly. Okay. And then what we do is we make sure that the pharmaceutical companies that are licensed to manufacture those are controlled in terms of the profit on the sale of those, so that we don't create another incentive.
Okay, I appreciate the call. And Carl, what about the idea?
I wish we were that progressive, where people who want to use an opiate can go to their physician and say, "Hey, I'd like to have my consciousness altered in this way that opiates provide." That would be great if we could actually do that, but I don't think we're anywhere near that proposal. Now, I am certainly not against those kind of proposals, but I think that we're so ignorant in this society about what drugs do and what drugs don't do. That's why I argue for decriminalization first, along with a corresponding amount of proper education about drugs. And so once you have the society more educated about what drugs do and don't do, sure, we can try these alternative approaches that, like the caller suggested. I'm all for it. I'm all for alternative ideas. But what I do know is what we're doing now is not working.
Steph off the Daily Circuit page.
Jane says, I think Professor's Hart argument could be strengthened by using the analogy of alcohol use rather than his analogy of driving and sex. And Jacob says, there's too much stigma behind drug use. Drugs such as MDMA, LSD, marijuana are all tools. If there are regulations and information on dosages and people could learn what not to combine, we would see a huge change in negative side effects.
Carl, one of the things I want to flesh out that you write about in the book is you point to a change in the way Americans began to see drug users during the Reagan administration. And you talk about some of those PSAs that many of us remember. Nancy Reagan was a part of that. I thought I'd play one of the PSAs that was created, then we can talk a little more about it.
Sure.
The drug dealers need to know that we want them out of our schools, neighborhoods, and our lives. And the only way to do that is to take the customers away from the product. Say no to drugs and say yes to life.
Of course, your local drug pusher may tell you a little something different about these drugs. And who you believe is up to you. But then again, if you go ahead and try them, at least it won't be out of ignorance. Just stupidity. What would I do if someone offered me these drugs? I'd tell them to take a hike.
That's Clint Eastwood, of all people, in the second half. Boy, they sound so dated, don't they? What happened in that era to change the way that we Americans started to see drug users?
Well, what happened was that the country got lucky, those kind of people got lucky, because crack cocaine came along. And when crack cocaine came along, we lied to the American public, and we told the American public that crack cocaine was a completely new drug. It wasn't. It's the same drug as powder cocaine. The only difference is that one is smoked and the other is either shot intravenously or snorted. But we all believed that it was a new drug. And so if it's a new drug, we have to up the ante on these things. The thing that they failed to recognize is that there has never been a drug-free society, nor will there ever be a drug-free society. And nor do I want to live in a drug-free society.
To the phones to Gerald in Brooklyn Park. Hi, Gerald.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know a lot of comments have been made, so I'll be brief. So initially I was calling in support of the analogy of sex and driving versus drug use, because legal drug use should be under that umbrella. So we just can't talk about how illegal drugs facilitate certain things. Legal drugs do as well. But also, as a writer myself, I also wanted to just remind the caller, a lot of times we write books and we dive into a subject, we share it, and then our audience is tempted to broaden our scope and include other things in it. And I would just remind you, just stay on scope, because I understand this is about decriminalizing it for the purpose that has been used to polarize our society now. And we have an abundance of minorities being arrested for crack, and then an abundance of upper-class individuals being paroled for cocaine use. And you've pointed out it's really the same drug. It's just been classified as a black drug or a white drug. So just stay on scope, and I think what you're saying will resonate to the rest of us.
Carl?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I when I make the analogy between sex and drug use, or driving and drug use, it's the appropriate analogy. I'm a psychologist, and I'm an expert in human behavior, and that's what I do. And I think that the analogy is appropriate. It's just that people have these stereotype, and they're shackled by these misconceptions about drugs. That's up to those folks, and if they want to learn, it's in the book.
You know, I have to say, and I don't know if stereotyping was driving my surprise when I read this, that you told a journalist recently, heroin is a much better drug, methamphetamine is a much better drug, but if you have to go to work the next day and get some sleep, it's not, so cocaine would be a better drug. There are so many better drugs. I think you were talking about marijuana there, but methamphetamine, a better drug, really?
Well, you know, it's really difficult when you talk to people and they only take a slip of what you say, right? So if we think about, we can't think about a drug in isolation of the context. So it all depends on what you're using the drug for. If I wanted to be alert in a conversation, or I needed to be cognitively aware, a nice low dose of methamphetamine, it's clearly better than a dose of marijuana. Now, if I had diarrhea and I was worried about my diarrhea, clearly heroin is a better drug than taking cocaine, marijuana, or alcohol, or any of those drugs. So it depends on the context.
To the phones to Greg in Duluth. Hi, Greg.
I'm a former resident of Harlem, and I watched a lot of junkies who were addicted to heroin make this complaint, that after you use it a while for recreation, eventually it's just to stay alive, because heroin creates a physiological dependency, which in fact is way and above all kinds of cultural, ethical, or utilization notions like staying awake or doing something else. Heroin can kill you before you even know it, just by taking too much of it any one time. And in fact, the whole idea of having heroin move from the pharmacological alkaloid population into the street heroin traffic is what's killing the country, just like meth started with pharmacology with the big pharma companies, and then ended up with independent manufacturers who made terrible and destructive substances.
Carl?
I like a similar distinction, not to conflate all those drugs as equal.
Okay.
Or the same.
Greg,
okay.
I'm a little tight on time here. Go ahead, Carl.
Great. So a lot of misconceptions there, a lot of ignorant sort of statements made. heroin, when we think about heroin physical dependency, people see it portrayed in movies as being this sort of potentially deadly thing. It's not deadly, but potentially deadly. You can't die from heroin withdrawal, but you certainly can die from alcohol withdrawal. Heroin withdrawal is like the flu. If you've had the flu, you've had heroin withdrawal. It's not pleasant, so I don't want to minimize that. As we all know, the flu isn't pleasant. But this notion that you can die from heroin withdrawal, that's just simply not true. Now, when we think about overdosing from heroin, 75% of the people who die from a heroin-related overdose do so because they combined it with another sedative, usually alcohol. So that means that only 25% of folks who die from opiate overdose, including heroin, die from the drug alone. And there are reasons for that. They've lost their sort of tolerance and a wide range of things. But people are, by and large, not dying from heroin overdose. They're dying from ignorance by combining it with another sedative. And so that's one of the goals of the books, to educate folks so to keep them safe.
The book, if you've just joined us, is called High Price, and it's featured on the Daily Circuit book page. Steph, off the page.
Jessica says, after listening to Dr. Hart's review of the statistics and that only 10% of users are using drugs out of addiction, I'm so used to thinking of drugs as bad, bad, bad. I grew up during the Just Say No campaigns, and now I'm thinking, why are they criminalized at all? My mind is blown.
They are criminalized because they are associated with people who we don't like. If we think about all of these drugs and we think about how we penalize them, they're typically penalized because a group that are using them are a despised group. Marijuana criminalization occurred in the 1930s because it was associated with Mexicans and black people. We think about opium at the turn of the last century. It was associated with Chinese people. Crack cocaine, it was associated with black people in cities. That's why drugs are penalized so heavily, because they're associated with groups we don't like. So one of my arguments is that people need to come out of the closet so we can see that there are a broader range of drug users, not just those people we don't like.
Carl, we have a doctor on the line, to Isaac in Minneapolis. Hi, Isaac.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my phone call.
Of course.
I think we live in a very irresponsible society. You can go to any gas station or any store and buy a packet of cigarettes, which has proven to be physically addictive, costly to society, deadly to people, and we can do that. I agree and disagree on many things with your guest, but what I agree the most is that education is what we need. If we're going to be a society that allows cigarettes to be legal, we should allow drugs to be legal, informing people, and we would get rid of a lot of the crime, trafficking, problems with other countries, growing drugs, and all those things. But for people who think that drugs are never going to be legal, think about the other way. Why in the world is tobacco legal in this country? It's a drug that's much harmful than many of the other drugs that
Speaking of. Isaac, thanks for the call. So, Carl, I just have a couple minutes left, but I also got a tweet about this. Who leads the education effort beyond your book and the things you're doing? I mean, how do we get it out to a broader population, I guess?
Well, the book is the first step, because when we think about who's doing education now, I can tell you who we shouldn't have doing education. When we start to have law enforcement officials teaching people about drugs, we've lost the battle. When we start having politicians talking about the effects of drugs because they have one sort of use, we've lost the battle. And so if we even have researchers talking about drugs, and when they only studied the effects of drugs, like the toxic effects on laboratory animals, that's not a good person to have to do the discussion. We need folks who have a broad range of understanding of drug effects, from the social to the biology to the legal and so forth.
And maybe, you know, given where we kind of started the conversation, which was, and the attorney general, for whatever his motives are, decriminalizing drugs, that does in some ways open the door to what we're talking about this morning, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think, like I said, I think the attorney general statements and comments were courageous and responsible and appropriate. But he can only do so much. We need Congress to step up.
Hey, good to talk this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Carl Hart's book is called High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs in Society. You'll find it featured front and center on the Daily Circuit book page.